Hello, hello, everybody. This is Alexandra Metters of GalacticConnection.com, and today is August 12th, 2014. And you can find me regularly on BBS Radio Station 2 on Tuesday afternoons from 3 to 4:55 p.m. Now, with that said, I've had quite an interesting day and evening getting ready for this interview. This must be a very interesting conversation today as we discuss the ins and outs of Freemasonry. This was a very spontaneous interview that was put together with Louise Schulman. I hope I pronounced it right, Schulman. And Louise is a very lovely lady, a friend of mine that knows her personally from Hansburg, South Africa. She's been researching Freemasonry for over 28 years, and in fact, her late father was a Freemason. And of course, as she was growing up in this kind of environment, she said she took part in the charismatic church movement. And this just got her started on a journey to find out what's really going on behind the scenes with the Freemasons. So I think we're all very curious to hear what she has to say today. And I can tell you this much, I've had a lot of interference to get this interview get it in the airways, I should say. So anyway, welcome, welcome, Louise. We finally got you on the call. Hello.
Hello, Alexandra, and thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
I am delighted to have you. And hey, tenacity is always a good thing, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And I can tell you, especially 28 years ago when you tried to find out, you had to stick to it.
Oh, didn't you? That is so true.
No internet in those days.
Well, thank God for that, because we probably wouldn't even know half of what we know now if we had as many internet problems today as we did back then. You know what I mean? We were just discussing, Louise and I were just discussing how there's got to be several cracks in the matrix because of the volatility of the internet and the lack of reliability. So anyway, with that said, so Louise, where do we begin? Tell me how you started down this walk of did it become an obsession to really get behind what the Freemasons are all about?
I wouldn't say it was an obsession about Freemasonry. It was more a need to find the truth or something that resonated with my truth. That's where it started.
Very cool.
And this was like in 1985, 1986. And like I said, I was part of a charismatic church movement, and my dad dropped the bomb. He was becoming a Freemason. And nobody could really tell me what that meant, other than, you know, the devil and the this and the that. Sorry, and that did not make sense, because my father was a beautiful human being. It just didn't make sense.
Interesting.
And you know, people would make statements like, yeah, yes, they do this. How do you know that? We know. How? You know, and so for an inquiring mind or somebody that doesn't just accept silly answers, very soon I was out of alignment with the church. In fact, I had to really, really start protecting myself against their brutal attacks and criticism and judgment.
So, I mean,
Were
they really brutal against you, per se, because you were a child of he being in the Freemasons?
No, because I kept on saying that the answers that they gave me was not good enough, because I'd have another question. And then I would get the normal, no, but you must just have faith. No, I can't just have faith. I was given a brain to explore. I'm a revisionist. I research. That's what I do.
Divide the truth, right?
Yeah. And that's where the journey led me. And like, you know, in those days, and this is, we spoke earlier about things are changing. They are certainly changing. Because in those days, there was no ways that you can go and could go to a Masonic temple or to speak to Masons to get information. It was a closed book, especially in terms of women.
Oh, yes.
But I would go to old, old bookstores and find treasures like, sorry, just hold on. Sorry about that.
No problem.
And find treasures like I have the most, one of my most wonderful books is The Morals and Dogma of Scottish Freemasonry by Albert Pike, an 1866 copy.
Wow.
So I had to go and dig and find and that's, it's taken me a long time. Of course, the internet has just opened it up.
Yeah, well, and there's such an, you know, excuse the word again, but there is such an obsession about learning and understanding thoroughly the whole Freemasonry movement, especially with its impact and, you know, influence on our political officials and presidents, et cetera.
You know, there's often a confusion with what people define as the Illuminati. Mm-hmm. And Freemasonry. They are not the same. It's not the same thing at all. I'm not saying that there aren't members of those organizations that have become Freemasons, but the philosophy of Freemasonry is not what the Illuminati stand for. And this started way back with Adam Weishaupt when he established the Illuminati. And it's a bit of a conflict because Illuminati actually means illuminated ones. Mm-hmm. And many, many hundreds of years ago, there was that need that people had to find illumination, to become enlightened. What Adam Weishaupt established was what they know today as the Grand Orient. And the Illuminati as a body, it's not a single body. It's basically an umbrella for a number of organizations. But the Grand Orient today is still a Masonic body. And the philosophy behind it is the same as ancient brotherhoods from Egypt, the mysteries of Dionysus, Bacchus, Ulysses, Ulyssinians, the Druids, the Kabbalah. Those are ancient mysteries. And many of these mysteries today have come through into this body called the Freemasons. And I have to tell you, what really got me going is if any of the major, major church movements say something is wrong, then my ears go up and say, why? Why don't you want people to know?
Very good point.
Why are you anti? Because all I have found is beauty. I'm not talking about Masonic behavior. I'm talking about the Masonic philosophy. It is beautiful.
That would be a definite distinction, wouldn't it? Well,
yes.
You know, they mentioned that the first Grand Lodge was in 1717, but what you are alluding to is that this has been around for a very long time.
It's been around. I was very, very delighted to do a talk at the Lyceum Lodge of Research in South Africa about 2 weeks ago, which is also now going to be indicative of the changes that are happening. And I spoke about Freemasonry being an ancient encyclopedia or an encyclopedia of ancient wisdom and insight. That was my topic. And I could speak an hour on the ancient connections with the ancient Persian Zoroastrianism, the mysteries of Noah, the Eastern mysteries. And they were very, very direct connections, even as far as ritual is concerned. But the fascinating thing was, is that this is like the number one lodge or one of the main lodges in South Africa. It can seat 180 people. There were, for the first time in their recorded history, 246 people. It was the first time that a woman had addressed Masons on Masonic topics.
I was just going to ask you that.
Lodge.
I was going to say, was it 246 people because you were delivering it as a female?
Quite possibly the interest was there, but it was also the first time feedback from the top degrees, the top office bearers, that it was the first time that a speaker got a standing ovation. I got two.
Wow, fantastic. Good for you.
And I basically discussed the esoteric aspects of the Masonic philosophy. They are so ready to hear this. You know, when a lot of people will say to me, yes, but the bottom levels of masonry, you know, those poor souls don't know what they're getting involved in. It's mm-hmm. the top oaks that are manipulating. Well, I believe that. I have discovered that the top guys, yes, they know more, but they know the esoteric aspects. And they are delighted to invite me in into their midst and to share it as a non-Mason.
Isn't that interesting? Now, what do you attribute that to?
The light is moving in, Alexandra. A light cannot be diffused. That's a scientific fact.
True.
And this is what's happening globally. People are wanting to know more. I'm for the next 6 months, I'm busy doing talks all over South Africa.
That's fantastic. So what do you feel are some of the core exposures that you've presented that were at least very secretive at one time and difficult to find out about that you have been able to unearth at this point?
Well, I have been able, you know, what I said is that the big thing that Freemasonry is a secret organization, that's absolute nonsense. Freemasonry is not a secret organization. It is not an organization with secrets. You have to search and you will find, and if you knock, the door will be opened. That has been my experience. I am embraced by these people. They are sharing. They are opening up. They're not giving me any information at all. They're not interested in that. They're allowing me to present my own truth.
Very interesting. So, I mean, do you feel that, like, their number one mission is to present an amalgamation of all the sacred ancient philosophies? Something like that?
Their number one ambition or aim is, and has been from the beginning of time, you had all these ancient mystery schools. And these were for people who wanted to join and find meaning, find their path, find the ancient knowledge, sacred wisdom. And Freemasonry has just continued doing that. What has happened is that due to the influence of the, what we would call Illuminati, the Grand Lodge in England, 1717, they've developed a situation where there are millions of ill-equipped Masons. Most Masons do not understand the esoteric spiritual aspects of their craft. And that is sad. It's not just for the elite. Anybody can join who wants to know, who wants to learn, and of good report. Anyone can join. There are even in Johannesburg and South Africa, there's Lady Masonic groups, there are Co-Masonic groups, and then, of course, then there's the Freemasons. But it's become – what has happened is Freemasonry, like all the other mystery schools, were for the select few. Now, this is not dictated to by the Freemasons. This is dictated by the individual's capacity to understand higher learning.
Very, and you know, that makes a lot of sense because that gets back to initiations.
Yes.
Yes, yes, definitely.
It is an initiation science. Now, prior to 1717, there weren't formalized rituals. There were master teachers. And these master teachers taught us or taught initiates to be their own saviors and not to rely on you know, in supplication to an external deity, which quite frankly defines the world of tyranny we live in today. And knowing thyself and finding the divine gloriousness within yourself. A large part of their journey from the first degree right up until the 33rd would be finding out who you are, finding the divinity within you. And it's a long journey. And people would say, but why do they do this in degrees? Well, for the simple reason, if you are grade A, you can't go to grade 12. You need to learn what's applicable to grade A, grade B, grade C. And this takes a lifetime.
Sure, sure. And in fact, I remember just looking at, it was a diagram of each of the steps of each of the degrees and how they were affiliated with a particular type of, oh, I'm trying to think, like one would be almost looking like a pope, or one would be somebody that was a politician, or, and I was very intrigued by that they would affiliate whatever their ability, whatever their form of communication was affiliated with that step. Do you agree with that? I mean, does that kind of fit in?
Well, yeah, it goes as they go from one degree to the next degree, they start exploring a different level of their own consciousness. Mm. Now, there are rituals involved, physical rituals. And you know what? These rituals are actually dramas. It's a theatrical expression of what they are learning in that particular degree.
Really?
It's not absolutely. It's a drama of note. I think we have a huge supply of Oscar nominees available among the Masons. It's the most beautiful drama. They enact a situation from ancient history. They act it out. So that's their ritual. Their ritual is enacting a drama. And as anybody would know, that this drama in modern Freemasonry is the building of King Solomon's temple.
Yes.
So they enact that. That is their ritual. And what they then find out of that is the meaning of the immortality of the soul. The belief in a higher being. You may not become a Mason if you do not have belief in a higher being. Whatever you choose to call that higher being.
So
you may not become a Freemason.
So some people say that they really do not get involved in religion per se. Do you agree with that?
They don't get involved in religion, but spiritual aspects are part of their ritual. You will find that in every lodge, if it's a Christian lodge, their volume of sacred law, which they call it, would be the Bible. If there are Hindu people in the lodge, if there are Muslim people in the lodge, or Hebrew Jewish people in the lodge, then their volume of sacred law will also be open. It's a respect for the belief structure of the individual.
Now, I do know, because I just did an immense amount of research on the Knights Templar, I do know that a lot of the evidence does state that the Freemasons really only had an intertwining with the Knights Templar due to the building of the cathedrals such as Roslyn and places like that, where they apparently pulled in some of the stonemasons. They literally had to kind of teach them some of their secrets, because they wanted to pass on, you know, the sacred geometry and the symbolism and things like that, and be able to embed that in the stone within the cathedrals. And the story goes that that is kind of where they met and where they separated. And from that point on, there were offshoots from that meeting or from those projects. Now, what have you found out?
Well, the Knights Templar, there are a huge amount of various Masonic orders. Okay. And this was now before, way before there was a United Grand Lodge, or before there was a Grand Lodge, or before Masonry became organized as a specific order. I mean, this was in the 1300s. Mm-hmm. They were already searching for this ancient knowledge. For example, part of their rituals would be standing on the cross, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay. In strength. But they were burnt as heretics for jumping on the cross. It was part of their ritual. It was a beautiful ritual that was misinterpreted. Do you know anything about the Shannon parchment?
Very little.
Okay. Well, within 1 year after Jacques de Molay and some of his men were burnt at the stake, which was a slow burning fire, within a year, a document was released by the Vatican. It's called the Shannon Parchment.
Oh, yes. Isn't this where Jacques de Molay was actually the imprinted in it, isn't it?
Well, they were exonerated of all crimes of heresy.
Yes.
And that document was misfiled for 704 years.
Yeah, I heard
about that. In 2008, this document was discovered, and the Vatican did offer an apology, but in Latin. Nobody actually could understand what they were saying. Jacques de Molay sacrificed himself. He knew what was coming.
Yeah.
He got most of his people out. He knew what was coming. He sacrificed himself to keep this knowledge safe. And you know what is the big thing that I have now discovered?
What?
Part of their greatest teaching is knowing thyself.
Yes.
So sort of taking charge of what you think and you say and you do. And this is an initiatory process to get people into that, or members who join out of free will, who want to explore this journey, to get them to start focusing more on the divide, the divinity within. Now, the chaos that we're currently having at the moment, for those people who are not initiated, and I'm not talking about initiated into Freemasonry, initiated into searching for higher knowledge. You and me and millions of us are initiated beings. We are looking for answers. We're exploring our own journeys. But the masses out there have not taken control of the creative part of their divinity. As you speak, you create.
Good point. I love it.
So it's time for the Freemasons, among others, to start speaking their truth so that it can become clear that we create as we speak. They create light. Light is part of their journey from the first degree, searching for light, searching for meaning. And that is why we're in chaos, because of the mass inability to understand that we are the expressions of the divine.
That's beautiful, Louise. Thank you for that. And, you know, I guess my burning question, though, is anybody who thinks of the Freemasons today will typically immediately go to the cabal or the governmental political officials of some sort. So where did they take a wrong turn, or are they in fact one and the same?
No, what they have created, the cabal, they've created a scapegoat, and they've called it the Freemasons. And the Freemasons, because part of the Masonic philosophy is not to be confrontational, but to walk away in peace and harmony. Beautiful.
Yes.
So it left them wide open for people to use them for target practice, and to use them as a scapegoat. You know, I've been exploring for, obviously, as all of us have, for many, many years. And I remember the other day listening to two people that I greatly admired through my journey. And the one guy was telling a story about, some or other general in the military that did XYZ in Iraq, and he was on about this. And then he said, and his grandfather was a Freemason. Mm. And I'm going, oh, for heaven's sake. Come on, guys. You want to be conspiracy theorists? Just have your facts together. There was another thing. A friend of mine emailed me urgently. There was a very sad happening in the States of a school shooting, a mass killing at a school. And the headlines read, and Hiram Lodge number 81 is just round the corner. And I'm saying, come on, guys. You go into the actual website of this particular lodge, and there they have established a fund to assist the families of those children. But nobody would bother and do that. They just, yeah, ah, you see, there we go. There's a lodge just behind them. They sort of take 1 + 2 and make it 10, and most people are sheeple. They just follow it. They love the hype of the conspiracy. They love the anti-system stance, standing for something. If you do not find your own truth, you're standing for other people's truth, and it means diddly squat.
Well, so what do you think that the cabal are practicing when they're constantly touting, you know, the Freemason degrees and initiations and, you know, a lot of this very kind of diabolical, ritualistic practice behind closed doors?
Well, I have to tell you, I am in the position. I know most of the rituals, not because I've been there, but because I have the literature, first-hand literature. And there's nothing diabolical about it. There's a lot of stuff that, out of respect, because it is a private and sacred institution, in my opinion, there are things that I will not talk about because it's not up to me to do that. But I can give you the assurance that there's nothing diabolical about it. It's like I said before, they enact various dramas and they have various passwords, and that is to identify one another as Masons, as brothers. And it's actually probably a bit archaic in a way, because it's, but that's what they do. That's, and their whole objective is to take the complete man. I'll just give you a little bit of symbolism here.
Okay.
To take the complete man, symbolized by a right angle triangle, to the perfected man, which is the equilateral triangle, which is all corners and all angles and all lines are equal. And that is their strive. You know, their strive is also to find the light, the hidden inner light, which is an ancient Egyptian philosophy, in every man, however unpromising, but to find that light. It's all about light, from the first degree right through to the end. It is all about light.
Interesting. So, I mean, is there like a screening process, or is it just strictly that if you have the desire to learn and seek out your own spiritual journey, that you're welcomed with open arms?
You have to be over 21 and have no criminal record.
And that's pretty much it. And you're saying now that you can be a female and join the Freemasons.
Yeah, well, they're not called Freemasons. They're called Lady Masons.
Lady Masons. And when did that begin?
Well, I know in South Africa it's been on for a couple of years already. I would say about 6 or 7 years. I may be wrong. And in my talk, I discussed this particular thing as well, because a lot of women will say, but, you know, why can't we become Freemasons? Well, for the simple reason, and this is my opinion, if we are activating membership to become a Freemason, if we are doing this from a platform of equal rights and activism, we are not in alignment with searching for a higher consciousness. That's not in alignment. Oh. Because there are equal and parallel alternatives. Freemasonry celebrates the masculine divine. There are many, many organizations that celebrate the feminine divine. Mm-hmm. And when the masculine divine and the feminine divine meet and come together on a level, there will be equilibrium and harmony.
True.
It's not about activism and equality. We don't have to fight for it. In fact, the feminine divine is already encapsulated in a lot of the Masonic ritual, which comes through in the higher degrees. For those who know how to recognize the divine feminine or the balance in all things.
Yes, and of course, at this point in the process of the shift that we're going through, that is one of the ultimate goals for each of us, is to be able to intertwine the divine masculine and feminine and be in equilibrium with both.
And that is what is most definitely happening, especially in the Masonic lodges where I've been talking. I've had one talk to what they would call Master Masons and above. All my other talks have been open to the public and the wives.
And are you finding the rest of the Masons that are participating in this, are they welcoming this move to have the women? Really?
I have to tell you a very, very funny story. As I did my last talk, I had two of my lady friends from Hainesburg came with me. And as I started talking, they were telling me the story that right next to them, there were these three gentlemen that faced with very strong frowns, straight ahead with their arms folded. And they were watching these guys as the arms started dropping. And as they started leaning forward, and when I finished, they jumped up and clapped their hands. So this is what is happening. They have welcomed me with absolute open arms.
Well, that's good.
And well, they're not helping in any way.
Well, and of course, you're speaking very positively about them as well. So I would imagine that they're appreciative of this.
Well, I would, you know, I've also, I don't think I've just been talking about the niceties. I've also pointed out to them that in a large group, in many, many lodges and among many, many Masons, they've basically become a glorified boys club with amateur theatricals and copious amounts of beer and wine. And they took that. They took that. They came to me and I said to them, it's about high time that you stop this. And return to your true charter, which is to elucidate, to teach. And I tell you what, they took it, they came, they said to me, it's about time, we needed to hear this, thank you.
That's awesome. Way to go, Louise. Way to go.
In fact, my partner Gary, when I left, he said, now, sweetheart, now don't go and shout at them. I said, no. But they are open to criticism. They are wanting to know. They want to learn. And all I talk about is the philosophy and the esoteric aspects, because every step that every office bearer from any cardinal point does at any point in time in the ritual has significant esoteric implications. It's a magnificent spiritual drama. No, having said this, 80% of Masons do not know this.
Wow. Why would that be?
Because the emphasis hasn't been on esoteric. Now, I have to tell you, of the most senior members of the Grand Lodge of England have indicated that the central core of Freemasonry should be esoteric, the most senior members.
So can you give us some ideas of, like, when you start out at step one, can you give us an idea of what does that indicate, you know, what's involved?
In terms of the Masonic path?
Yes.
Okay. Well, the first step is basically the initiate, or what they would call the entered apprentice. And it's pretty much focuses on the mind, the physical body, the mind. And the process of using the mind, because as you think, so you become.
Oh, that's so true. Yes, yes.
The second phase is what they would call the fellowcraft mason. The fellowcraft is almost like a bridge. It's a passing over. It's more of a spiritual ritual that unfolds. The third thing is what they call the master mason. And these are the first degrees of the craft, or the craft degrees. Now, the master mason deals with the immortal man and the immortal man, the death, the dying, the whole eternal soul, the eternal spirit, the standing with integrity. It's all about that, and it's basically the you know, you've heard of the square and the compasses. Everybody sees the square and the compasses.
Yeah, the square and the compass and the rule. Yeah.
Well, the square basically is about the integrity. You stand on the square in all your dealings with all of mankind. That's what it symbolizes. The compass is the celestial, the spirit, the soul. Coming together. Now look at the symbolism. It's beautiful.
Yes, yes it is.
But in the past, when you see that, you go, ooh. But that is basically what it means. Those are the three degrees of the craft. From there on, you start exploring higher degrees. You go to the Royal Arch, the Rose Quartz, the Knights Templar, and. And those explore the resurrections of soul, the ascension of soul. Can you believe it? They teach ascension of soul.
That's fantastic. And so you're saying that this was basically kind of like an acquired, God, how do you say it? It's almost like a compilation of all the ancient teachings that they put together and I mean, it's not any one particular religion, as you said, but it's opening up the initiate to finding their true soul connection.
Absolutely. Okay. Now, many people did not focus until now, because now is the time, you know, in this age of Aquarius. Mm-hmm. In the past, they were taught the ritual. And the ritual was lost in meaning. It's just a bunch of guys that got together, did this thing, it felt good, you know, it's a mystical, it's a mysterious, it's a secret. There's a lot of ego involved.
Very much so.
But
yeah.
As our time is unfolding, our time space is opening up, the true knowledge, the true messages that have spoken to us. Now, this knowledge, this ancient knowledge, has stood the test of time for thousands of years, and it is still around.
Hmm.
It must stand for something.
Well, yeah. Now, there has been some controversy about how many presidents were Freemasons, and supposedly a lot less than people think. So what is your perspective on that? They've actually said that out of the 56 figures that signed the Declaration of Independence, there were only 9 that were confirmed to be Masons.
Well, I would have hoped that there were more, because yes, the founding fathers of America were Freemasons. It was these founding fathers that were against the banking structures that we have today. They actually fought against it. They had them kicked out of the country. The British-American War was the cause of that, to force these presidents into submission. Yes, they saw the dangers. So, yes, they were. Most of them were founding fathers. The same in South Africa.
Interesting.
They were Freemasons. Yes.
And how about in England?
I would think that the royalty basically sort of really got involved here after the 17, because, you know, even 1717, the Grand Lodge was formed, but there was huge amounts of disputes in terms of ancient masonry and modern and operative Freemasonry and speculative Freemasonry. There was a lot of, it was only in the later 1776 that the United Lodge came together, which basically represented that represented the English lodges. In South Africa, you have a different lodge. It's the Grand Lodge of South Africa, which is not an English lodge. It's an Afrikaans lodge, also obviously open to English-speaking people. So you have various lodges. There are many orders that would like to link themselves to Freemasonry, but they are not part of Freemasonry.
Such as who?
Been in the past, like the Golden Dawn, hermetic groups, essentially. That doesn't make them bad.
No,
but
no.
They are not part of Freemasonry.
Yeah, true.
And a lot of people would like to take all these things and chuck them into one pot. You can't do that. And a lot of people, what they don't understand, they chuck into the devil's pot, which makes it even worse.
Well, now you've brought up the devil part and the fact that you had some people, you know, basically protest and say, oh, that's part of the devil. Tell me a little bit about that. Why has it been construed that it's so involving the devil itself?
Okay, well, this becomes a very, very interesting topic and a research project of mine, which is not necessarily linked to Freemasonry, but the obviously origin of the devil. You know, the ancient masters of Freemasonry taught one, like I said before, to know thyself, to stand in the divinity of the self. Mm-hmm. So there is no devil. A devil is a scapegoat. Mm-hmm. It's somebody that the devil made me do, or the devil tempted me, or this or that or the next thing. Absolute nonsense. We have this incredibly powerful divinity within us that as we speak, so we create. So we cannot accept the gifts of divinity and blame somebody else because of what we created. Or something else for that matter. So in my opinion, the devil has no place in my life, in my expression, and in what I've experienced in terms of my research into Freemasonry.
Interesting. So it's just representing the archetype, the shadow.
Absolutely.
The shadow side.
Okay. Absolutely. And you know, it's like the conundrum with the word Illuminati, being the illuminated ones, the enlightened ones. That title no longer fits with what they are linked to today. So that's something that we need to explore. Why is that? It's the same with the term Lucifer. It means light. Mm-hmm. How do we get the devil and the light in the same pot? I need to still find my own truth in this regard.
Well, and that's just in my opinion, classic dark manipulation is to take exactly the opposite of what they mean.
Yes.
I mean, they do it with everything. So this is no different. But I think what everybody's probably, if anybody who's listening to the show right now, I think they're still scratching their heads as if to say, well, wait a minute. All we ever do, every article practically on the internet that's conspiratorial related, you know, they're constantly bringing up the Freemasons and what's going on above the 33rd degree. What would you say to that?
I would say to them, you can go to any lodge. You can ask to speak to the master and you can ask the questions. They're even doing tours through the Mother Lodge, the Grand Lodge of England. Go and speak to the people, not about them. Mm-hmm. Go and find out for yourself. Go and read books by Lawrence Gardner. Do me a favor, read books by Masons. They know what they're talking about. And they're not shy. I mean, and this stuff that we're talking about now, I've got ancient books well, 18th century, even 17th century books.
Wow.
Things have changed very little in 300 years.
Interesting. That's awesome to have some, talk about find, have a book from the 17th century. That's incredible.
It's available. It's available. You can even go to Masonic libraries. Go in. Go read. It's on the internet. It's open. But people do – what I find very, very interesting, the majority of people – and I'm sure you find that as well, Alexandra – a lot of people have become spiritual parasites.
Yes.
They sort of latch onto you and they want all your stuff so that they can just spew it forth in another space. Okay. The whole idea of enlightenment and this journey is that you get off your backside and you start searching for your own truth. Go into the libraries. Go and read. Go and speak to the people. Go and meet these people.
You know, it's interesting you're saying that because I'm kind of a broken record. I often say, listen, my truth is not going to be the same as your truth.
Yes.
And we need to learn to agree to disagree and also respect everybody else's perspective as long as it's not infringing upon the free will of another individual or, you know, as long as it's not in disrespect or creating disharmony. And,
absolutely.
And this is where we get stuck from the old Christian perspective of truth. You know,
yes.
What is truth? So, I mean, what would you say to people if they said to you, hey, Louise, you know, how do you define truth? What would you say?
I find truth as a spiritual experience. It's an intuitive knowing within me that this is good.
Yes.
It resonates with the best aspects of who I am. And that, in that moment in time, is my truth. You know, another beautiful thing about Freemasonry, we have a little town here in South Africa called Jagersfontein. Now, in the Anglo-Boer War, there were Afrikaans Freemasons and there were English Freemasons. This lot would get together for a lodge meeting in the same building, have their meeting as brethren, and then go back and fight the war. They didn't want to fight the war. They were held at ransom. They were brothers, unfortunately not brothers of the same arms. Now, can you imagine if some of our higher leading politicians would embrace that kind of understanding where various leaders from various ideologies can go together in the same place on equal footing and resolve issues? Because that is what Masonry is. All men are equal. They come together in the lodge and they are brethren. Can you imagine an environment where people can resolve issues in that environment?
Well, I can only because one of my favorite documents is the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
You know, far more than the Constitution any day.
And absolutely.
It's just a superb piece of penmanship. You know,
absolutely.
Gives me goosebumps when I read it. So, you know, and I think the other thing about truth is when you know that you have stumbled upon truth, you know that you have found an aspect of yourself. And you
absolutely.
You have re-sparked that excitement, that knowing within yourself.
Absolutely.
And this is why they're all different. This is why everyone's truth is different. So, you know, once again, we tend to take the definition of a certain word and attach a lot of garbage to it, not looking
yes.
at just the true identity of the word itself. But
yes.
Anyway, I'm kind of getting off the tangent, so forgive me for that. But
I love doing that.
Tell me a little bit about, you know, like, the Freemasons versus the Stonemasons. What was their relationship together?
Okay. Well, the stonemasons were very much, according to the physical aspects or the mental aspects of Freemasonry, you had a worker who was taught to cut stones in specific ways, straight, square, and they had to use the various tools, which are like the plumb rule, the square, the skillet, whatever their tool is. Your second degree, which we know today as fellow craft, but in those days were the supervisors, for lack of a better word. Mm. And then you had the masters, and the masters were the architects.
Oh, okay.
And the stonemasons, if you go into a lot of the most magnificent cathedrals, they built according to specific sacred geometric proportion. A lot of the golden mean one would find, the Fibonacci one would find in their buildings. It's such a big field, I can't even begin to – if you walk into those cathedrals, you almost have an experience of elevation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you find that when you walk under a pyramid.
Yes. And so so what you're saying is the Fibonaccis were actually designed into the flooring or the walls or the archways or what have you?
Absolutely. Now, in the Masonic lodges, when you go into your entered apprentice or into your fellow craft or into your masters and whatever, certain words are spoken. These words are spoken from the ancient knowledge of creating a vibration, which is beautiful. Some people will look at it as magic. Magic wasn't what we would think today as parables and magical stories. It was actually considered a science. If you look at in the beginning, God said, "Let there be light." For most of our lives, we looked at this and thought, "Ooh, this is a bit of myth." But today we know it as a science. It's sonoluminescence. It's ultrasound technology. As you put certain frequencies through a liquid, the bubbles will implode and create light. So a lot of what we thought were miracles and magics were purely scientific knowledge that was available to the ancients at the time. Isaac Newton, those people were all connected to masonry.
Interesting.
Robert Boyle.
And I would imagine Da Vinci.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. Most definitely. Dan Brown did a marvelous job. I often say that his marketing campaign was given to him on a tablet because the Roman Catholic Church did a marvelous job of marketing his thinking.
Well, and that brings me to a question. Don't the Catholics and the Vatican, they don't think very highly of the Freemasons, I thought. I thought that they've
Sorry.
No. I just thought that they had kind of denied them and downgraded them. I was curious if you agree with that.
Thousands and thousands of Masons were hunted down. The witch hunts was also against Masons. Jacques de Molay and them were burnt at the stake. Hitler banned them. Because Hitler was, we know today the connection between Hitler and the Vatican. Okay.
Right. So you're using the Freemasons and the Knights Templars interchangeably.
Well, yeah, because they were different periods of time. The Knights Templar re-established themselves in Scotland.
Yeah,
and much of the Rosicrucianism is linked to that, or what we know today as Rosicrucianism. So they had to reestablish themselves, but they were all interconnected. The Freemasons, the Vatican, and all the churches, even the Protestant churches, very, very anti-Freemasonry. My father was in a position where he had a minister that didn't judge him. He just adored my father for the human being that he was. My father was not allowed to sit on the church council because he was a Freemason. But there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of things that people don't know. You know, they would mouth off stuff like they're of the bloodline of Cain. Well, if you do your research, you'll see that Nama, the sister of Tubal-Cain from that bloodline, was Noah's partner. So come on, then many, many more people come from that bloodline. So people mouth off stuff and they don't really know what they're saying. They're speaking other people's truth. You know, my father was a Mason. My partner's father was a non-Mason. But they both walked a path of initiation into knowing thyself. Both of their lives came to full circle. One structured, one less so.
Interesting. And so what does one normally spend as far as the amount of time in each step on average?
It used to be 7 years.
Wow.
Yes. In the ancient days, it used to be 7 years. If you look at the...
We must have lived a lot longer, huh, Louise?
Well, it was a lifetime. It was a quest for knowledge. These days it's much, much quicker. I would say possibly 18 months to 2 years per degree. And the people are encouraged now, and a lot more so lately, to go and study more, to find more answers, and like I said, this information is available on the internet. I know in some of the initial degrees, the candidate would step down on the left foot and bring the right foot into the hollow of the left. Now, initially, the physical explanation of that is to stand square, to stand with integrity. But when you look at us esoteric beings, I looked at this and I said, no. That means to step down in the mind and bring consciousness in the hollow thereof. And there's two aspects to everything. And it's beautiful.
Very good.
And it's two positive aspects.
Wow.
It's two interpretations.
That's fascinating.
That are equal and parallel and beautiful.
So when you talk about the ritualism, can you tell us a little bit about the significance of why so much emphasis has been placed on that? What is it doing? What are they gaining from that? What are the advantages of that?
I sometimes think it's just activating this inherent theatrical aspects of who all of us are. it's a drama, like I said before. They are actually participating in this, so they really are part of it. They're internalizing this information at a much deeper level. Like I said, by certain words that are spoken, the vibratory level of the lodge is increased towards growth and enlightenment. So it's very much so, if somebody asks you, what does Italy look like? Most people will say a shoe, because it's a visual experience, it stays in your mind. But if you were to ask me what Romania looks like, I'm going to go, there's no association. And as one internalizes, you're acting this out. You're understanding it. You're speaking the words. You're greeting with the grips. You are experiencing it at all five senses, and it's very much the material, the spiritual, the intuitional, the mental, all the planes, all our fivefold being, essentially. We are experiencing what is happening here in this mystery at every level. And a lot of people would say, but, you know, why strive? Why strive towards enlightenment? Because they would say that you will find your enlightenment in Jesus, or you will find your enlightenment in God, or whatever. No. The Bible clearly says, be ye perfect as your Father is in heaven. And that means that we have the capacity to do that. We have the internal capacity to be perfect. And this is what the Mason strives towards. So in the first degree, in the second degree, the first degree, they're sort of experiencing the mental aspects, the walking around, the perambulation, the thinking about it. The second degree, they're going up a little bit higher. They're experiencing waters, cleansing waters. They're experiencing food for soul. And those masons that are listening will know exactly what I'm talking about. And they are then led into the third degree, where this drama unfolds, where this architect would not give away the secrets that we spoke about earlier. Because the secrets of building are also the secrets of the spiritual. They did not only build a temple. In fact, it is my interpretation that they didn't actually build the temple. The temple of Solomon is the spiritual temple of man, and that you design a plan for your life. You have a plan for your life. That's the architect within you. You can work at your life. You stand with integrity. You square your stones. You check your behavior. You be careful what you speak. So that is the whole preparation towards creating the perfect man.
Nice. So it's just an exterior representation of that which is within.
Absolutely.
How, that's beautiful. And so now, what would you say are the distinct differences? You had mentioned before the Rosicrucians, which is one of my, I like them a lot. You know, your Rosicrucians, your Knights Templar, your Freemasons, your Hermetics. What would you say is the primary difference, or are they all really after the same thing?
They're primarily after the same thing. They just have different expressions.
Right. Okay.
And so, I mean, I often bring Thoth, the writings of Thoth, into my presentations. Mm. I bring the writings of the Essenes into my presentations. We're all saying the same thing. We just have a different way of expressing it.
Nice. So tell us a little bit about the Essenes and how they fit in with the Freemasons. That's a subject near and dear to my heart.
Basically, you would find certain aspects. They paid a lot of emphasis on knowing thyself, knowing that you have the power to split asunder the mighty tree. Be careful of your thoughts. That's the aspects that I primarily use of the Essenes, the ability to know the divinity within you.
Mm, beautiful.
And if I look at the ancient Eastern, if I look at the Druids talk about a point within a circle, because the point is the center from which man cannot err, and the circle has no ending. That was symbolic, and the Freemasons utilize that symbol as well. It's also the ancient symbol for the alchemy of gold, the transmutation of spirit. And that's a very powerful symbol in Masonic circles, is the point within a circle. But it was also present among the Druids.
Interesting. Yeah, that goes back into the Coptic records, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very interesting.
And so, also into the ancient alchemy.
Yes, yes, which is near and dear to my heart. Now, when you were researching this, how far back were they referencing Freemasonry too?
There are many, many writers, and that's marvelous. There are those writers who take it back to the building of Solomon's Temple.
Okay.
There are many, many Masonic writers like Willenthurst, wonderful books to read, C.W. Leadbeater, many, many, many authors that go right back to the Atlantean times.
Nice.
Reverend G. Oliver. These are books that were written in the 18th century and late 17th century. They were not scared to understand in those days to talk about Atlantis, to talk about us being our sun being the center of our universe, not us. They were not scared to talk about these things because they knew. They knew the alchemy. They knew the alchemy of anti-gravity. They knew that because they speak, for example, in the, I've got a book that was written in the 18th century that speaks of the white powder of gold, which we suddenly with David Hudson went, oh, wow, guys, they've known about this for years. It's actually the point within the circle. It's the light.
Interesting. And how about the stones? The stones that were actually turned to gold.
The philosopher, where they talk about the philosopher's stone.
Yeah.
That's part of Masonic, ancient Masonic teaching. Ancient Masonic teaching.
So really, all of this is overlapping. I mean, when the Freemason Grand Lodge was begun, now who was the first one to create the Grand Lodge for the Freemasonry?
I would say the Grand Lodge was the England that tried to standardize and bring things together. The Grandmother Lodge in England in Queen Street was brought together for this. You know, when you actually go into that building, I haven't been in. I've just looked at footage and I just get the feel. It's absolutely magnificent. And there's this beautiful honorary roll for all Masons that died in all the wars. But also, like I said before, we speak about the witch hunts where 9.5 million women and children were killed. The Masons lost hundreds of thousands of people through just being a Freemason. You could lose your life.
And therefore, that was when the secret societies began.
That's when they started saying, And this secret societies, they were not developed to sort of hide ignorance. They were there to protect wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So there was so much bigotry and so much horrible, horrible stuff that went down because they were in opposition to what the church said. The church said, you will pay your dues. You will be on your knees and you will come through me to the Father type thing.
Yes.
The Masons knew that the ancient knowledge rested upon knowing the divinity within you. So it was diametrically opposed to the church. They were taken out by the thousands.
Yeah, that's – well, okay, now that brings me to another question. Now, from what I read, when the Knights Templar were excavating and they went into the Mount Moriah, which then turned into the Temple of King Herod, which then turned into the Temple of Solomon, and after 9 years they discovered something so mind-blowing, so incredible, that when they – once they filed paperwork with the Vatican – they were considered to be the other Vatican. They were never subservient. They never were in a position, at least at that point, until the King of France got, you know, really heavy-handed with trying to, you know, seize their property and their money. But before that time, they were very sovereign. So I was wondering, what do you feel was that they found? Was it the primordial mound?
I believe that they found ancient writings. They found the knowledge of sound, of frequency, of vibration. They found the ancient or very, very old sacred writings. We don't have that. We can't prove that. But they certainly found, you know, a lot of people look at King Solomon and just look at him as this oak in the Bible that had many, many wives and he was known for wisdom. He was known for a lot more than that. He was a very, very highly evolved being. And a lot of that ancient knowledge, which today people will look as alchemy and magic and all kinds of things, or the occult. Oh, they love that word.
Yes. True.
So I would think. Sorry, I just need to have a quick cough.
Okay.
Sorry.
You're no problem.
So there was a lot of that kind of information that I believe they did find, and they were in there. And they were becoming very, very, they were applying these ancient methods of manifestation. And they become extremely powerful. And then the France wanted money from them or some of their gold, the King of France.
Yes.
And they just got to a point where they said no. And he got together with a pope, I think it was Pope Clementine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it was Pope Clement X. who was blackmailed by King Richard IV, I believe, right?
That's King right. Richard. And then that's where Friday the 13th comes from.
Yes.
Still on the Thursday, they were all preparing together, Jacques de Molay and the Vatican and the King. The next day, they were brutally attacked. However, Jacques de Molay knew that this was coming.
Yes.
He sent 18 of his ships or whatever to some to Spain and some to Scotland, or mostly to Scotland. And he basically sacrificed himself. As if you go into the ancient Egyptian history, this seems to be a role that plays out. There was the Pharaoh Sekwenare, who held these ancient mysteries. And then there was the Hyksos king Apophis, who wanted this information. And he killed him and still didn't get the information. Now, the story in masonry is that the architect of Solomon's temple had this knowledge. And they confronted him, some people, and they wanted this knowledge, and he wouldn't give it to them, and he was killed. Now, Jacques de Molay did exactly the same thing. It's this thing of staying to your truth, not being scared to face death, because you know yourself as mortal and immortal. Mm-hmm. And it's very much that feeling. And this is a drama that's been played out for hundreds of years.
So how much do you know about Jacques de Molay?
I suppose just as much as anyone can read in terms of the literature that is available.
And I know that, like you said, I had read that there was a leak that these arrests were going to go down and these executions were going to go down. And so they were able to get over 3,000 Knights Templar out.
Yes.
What exactly do you think that they were taking with them?
I think, and I can laugh at my partner, because if he was sitting right near, he'd be rolling his eyes and saying, woo-woo. I think a lot of it. I'm in this delightful relationship with a marvelously left-brained person, and we get on like a house on fire. But I think what would have happened is that a lot of that information is available somewhere near, around, or beneath Roslyn. Mm,
interesting.
Woo 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 woo.
Well, there is a lot of talk right now. I can personally attest to it myself, but there is definitely a lot of movement from some that are being drawn to return back to Ireland and Scotland.
Yes, love it. Just love it. I read a book the other day called Ireland, the Land of the Pharaohs.
Ooh. Well, yeah.
Marvelous stuff.
Yeah, the Land of the Pharaohs. I got to write that one down. How much do you know about the Isle of Man?
Not too much.
Because
heard it?
You had brought up the document that was available in 2008, and it was reinstated by the Vatican. But the other thing I read was that in 2013, they had actually prophesized that the reunion of the Knights Templar would occur in 2013.
I would not be surprised. I don't know. I think there is at the moment a unification process of light, and very much for people that are standing on their truth and moving towards this, like I said, even among the Masonic circles, very, very much so. Very much so. 2 years ago, I was invited to do a talk in a little town called Zanin. Oh, I must tell you another bit of woo-woo.
Please do. Please do.
I have to share this woo-woo. My dad came and saw me last year in August. He's been gone since 2006. And he was in this, or at least he took me to a place, and he was in this most incredible beautiful place. And before they were draping him. They were draping him in robes of white and gold. And it was as if I was invited for this occasion. And as I walked up to say goodbye to him, I thought, oh, no, I can't go near him now. He's a holy man. But he stepped forward and embraced me. And I knew that I had been in what the Masons call the Grand Lodge above. Okay. So this happened in August, and it was such a profound effect in my life. And in December, I decided time out. Because I had been doing lectures every Tuesday evening at my house, presentations on anything for 3.5 years. So in December, I said, that's time out. Somebody else must take over. I'm just not doing this anymore. I need a break.
I bet.
And for 3 months, I didn't read. I didn't read. Then I got invited to Gary's, my partner's uncle, who's also a Mason, to their 50th wedding anniversary. And I got there, and there were these Masons, and I came alive. I just came alive. The next day, I got a request from a lodge, a beautiful lodge. It's called the Pyramid Lodge, and they do once a year a working under nature, under the starscape, which is absolutely beautiful. Anyway, so I got invited to do a talk there. Within 2 months, I was doing a 150th celebration talk in a lodge in Bloemfontein, and a month after that, I was in the number one lodge in South Africa. Absolute, the doors are flying open, the energies are connecting to us from grand lodges above, whichever, whatever you want to call it.
And, you know, another thing that I found really intriguing by what you suggested earlier was anyone can go in and access these libraries of theirs?
Yes, you can. I go into MasonicLibrary.org.
Ooh, write that down, everybody. MasonicLibrary.org.
Yeah. And they are there. There's books, there's papers, there's everything you want to know.
Nice.
And that is why it is so beautiful to actually go and look. And, you know, it also depends, as we spoke about earlier, that the divine principle within us dictates how we see things and how these things manifest. Because I tell you what, some people can take those books and go and say, you see, The intent with which you read that book will enhance your experience, either for the negative or the positive. I choose to see the simplicity and the beauty of the ancient mysteries in Freemasonry.
Gosh, that's so true. So I'm thinking right off the bat, some of the things that people equate with Freemasonry. What about the checkered board floors? What do those mean?
They basically means that you stand on the platform of choice, dark and light.
Okay.
You choose.
Interesting. What about the pillars? The pillars are left and right?
Ancient pillars that still come from the time of ancient Egypt. And if you go and look at the ancient buildings of Egypt, Sumeria, India, Greek, Rome, even the Mayans, you'll find pillars.
Yes.
Very interesting concept.
And I love them.
And they basically mean in strength is the one pillar and to establish is the other. So in strength to establish light.
Nice. Now, there's been a lot of controversy about their actual logo or icon, and it has a G in the center. What do you think that G stands for?
Well, you can call it God, or you can call it the great architect of the universe.
Okay.
Because the Freemasons have known for thousands of years that there's more to this universe than our little planetary existence.
Interesting. And when you said that a lot of things ended up in Roslyn Chapel, for example, do you feel that the Ark of the Covenant was in their... I lost you there for a second. Go ahead.
I'm not I'm not sure. Can you hear me? I'm here. Okay.
Okay.
I think the Ark of the Covenant, now, I haven't done enough research to find my own truth on this one, but I do think that it's still connected with Ethiopia.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay, I can hear you.
Okay, that's what I think. I have not done enough research in that regard. The Ark of the Covenant also plays a critical part in the symbology of Freemasonry.
Why so?
You will find if you go into the Grand Lodge of England, you look at the crest, you will find the Ark of the Covenant. Mm. It represented a spiritual temple. It's all about the temple, and the Temple of Solomon was already designed by Moses.
Yes.
It was just a thread that's running through. The Freemasons look at this as a spiritual experience of growth. So that Ark of the Covenant is embraced in their coat of arms.
Very interesting. I didn't pay attention to that before. Thank you for that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Now, why did they come up with the word lodge? I mean, because I know there's always reasonings for everything.
I actually don't know.
Isn't that kind of strange? What, a lodge? I just always wondered why they referred to it as a lodge.
They also call it a temple.
A temple, okay.
They also call it a temple, but I think the lodge and all of its, the area and all of its buildings is a lodge. I wouldn't know if there's any specific meaning attached to that. I haven't actually questioned that. I'll go and do that this afternoon.
Well, so basically, these guys were total experts in how to build a sacred temple physically in the physical matter in order to assist you in reaching your highest connection, right?
I could not have said it better.
Okay. So they incorporated everything. They incorporated color and, you know, the golden mean and the Fibonacci and the shape of the circles and the squares and things like that. Is there anything else that you can come up with that was fairly unique in the way that they built their structures?
They have several what they call liberal arts and sciences. And that is like grammar, rhetoric, the way that you express, because if you cannot express yourself properly, you can't teach. So it's grammar, rhetoric, logic, astronomy, geometry, mathematics, and did I say music?
No, not yet.
Seven of them. Those were, it's almost a connection to the chakras.
Yeah.
Those are the seven liberal arts and sciences, and when they come together, when you align the fivefold being of man, when all these things come together, you have an absolute enlightened state of being. And if we can have that all over the planet, you know, they have what they call the four cardinal virtues and three theological virtues. And the cardinal virtues are prudence, justice, temperance, and fortitude.
Nice.
And the theological is faith, hope, and charity. And as I was working through this, something that just manifested in me, that is, if you understand prudence, justice, fortitude, and temperance, it becomes a dance. It manifests in faith, hope, and charity. Mm. And if you have a combination of all those things, these seven values, you will find love, what we call God, or what we call love. So it's the expression of the word.
That was beautiful.
And that is part of Masonic philosophy. In fact, it's part of their lectures. It's part of their learning.
Wow. That's lovely. Wow. It sounds like, okay, so how far have you gone through this process?
I will never become a Mason.
Why not?
I don't have to.
Okay. I'm just curious because you're so passionate about it and you're so well versed in it.
I'm passionate about the philosophy of beauty.
Yes.
The philosophy of common sense. The philosophy of divine proportion. I'm passionate about that. I feel that in my truth, I don't have to become a Mason. I don't have to become anything. I just have to express my truth. And it's interesting that of all things in this planet that I could have done, it was in Freemasonry. I've been really led up a very, very strange path, I have to tell you. Oh, it was my soul agreement. I can accept that.
That's so funny. And so when your dad became a Mason, did you just know right then and there that this was going to be something you were really going to research a great deal and, you know, continue to dig deeply and end up buying phenomenally cool books, building a library?
No. I don't. You see, the beauty of our path as we walk this, being involved with the church for such a significant period of time, I knew my Bible, and I still do. And that in alignment with Masonic knowledge, with the knowledge of the occult, it all makes a beautiful big picture, and it just really comes together. No, I didn't know, but I did know that what I heard, like, for example, in the first degree, the candidate is asked, what does he want from this? And he is prompted to say, light. Now, when he enters the temple, he is blindfolded because it's this marvelous drama that I told you about.
Right.
So as the light is then, or the hoodwink thing is then removed, he then has light. It's just this beautiful symbolic experience. And what the first thing that I was told is, oh, my Lord, Jesus says, I am the truth, the light, and the way. Who do these Masons think they are to give it to you? Well, I sort of battled with that for a while, and then I realized, no. If we want to quote, then we need to quote that even the Lord said you can do all these things and more, because that light is within us. And that's where my journey started, my opposing to what they were telling me. And initially it was to really, really save my father and to show him what a terrible thing he has done. And as I started trying to prove that, I found the beauty. You know, it's like walking in a garden desperately looking for a weed, and I only find roses.
Oh, that's so funny.
It was really, really, that was not my plan, to become a pro Freemason. Not part of my plan. But obviously it was a soul contract, and I feel very, very in alignment with that. And wherever this may lead, that is fine.
Yeah, good. You know, and I just had an aha, because I know back in the days of the Renaissance and even before that, they used drama, they used stage performances a great deal to present ideas that were considered heretical, and pass on that knowledge, but doing it secretly, right?
Yes.
And so
yes.
Was this one of the reasons that they did that this way?
I believe that's why, because like I said, they say that this wisdom was covered, not in ignorance, but to protect this wisdom. Mm. So that's why they did it. And it's twofold. They did it that way, but also when you are part of a drama, when you go onto theater, you know your lines, you know what it feels like, you know where you stand. It becomes part of your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. It's not just a blah, 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 blah.
Very good
point. It's not just people talking to one another. They're actually experiencing it. So there's a number of reasons why this happened. But it is, in my opinion, an ancient, a sacred, and a private ritual that should be respected as such.
Right.
If you want to know more, go and ask them. And I promise you, the Masons will answer you. They want to talk to you.
That's interesting. So when you, let's just say you decided to go down this route. When you start out, are you assigned a mentor? You assigned a teacher? How does that work?
You basically, there are 7 office bearers when you start, and you can basically discuss anything with them that you want, and they will all assist and help you. You are actually encouraged to research and study your own. I mean, one of the second things that come through in the second degree is to study the nature, to study nature and the sciences.
Cool.
So you are encouraged to be your own mentor, to become your own mentor.
That's awesome. Now, how many degrees are there really? Because there's been a lot of speculation about that.
Essentially, there's 32 degrees, which most of them are side degrees. Your craft degrees is your first 3. Your 33rd degree is an honorary degree. It's like a professorship.
Okay. Well, so how, you know, for all of those that are, have a great deal of knowledge in the conspiratorial realm, how do you deny all of the information that's come forth about that, the 33rd degree Masons and, you know, all the atrocities that they've been involved in?
Like I said before, if one discusses the human element in anything, you can set yourself up for anything, negative, positive, whatever, because of the human element. Mm-hmm. I'm going to ask those people to look at the philosophy, to look at what is really, really behind Freemasonry. I'm going to ask those people to really search for answers, because the more we buy into destruction and negativity, the more we will manifest that. Find the beauty. Those people that are out of a line are not out of a line because they are Freemasons.
Mm-hmm.
They are out of a line because they have a negative, destructive, reptilian, evil agenda.
Yeah, definitely.
But it's not because they are Freemasons.
So what you're basically alluding to as well is they have used the Freemason kind of institution, if you want to call it that, or the fellowship, they've used that as a way to promote their own nefarious acts under the guise of something that they really are not.
Absolutely. You know that whole policy of distract them, keep them distracted while we're busy with other stuff. Mm-hmm. While all these conspiracy theorists are looking at Freemasonry and all this stuff and the statues of Levi with the horns and all kinds of, while we keep them busy with that stuff, they don't see what we're really up to.
Mm.
And they don't really care if you associate them with Freemasonry. They really don't care. Because they have no commitment to the esoteric values, the philosophy, the beauty of the craft. They really don't care what happens to it.
Yeah, they're definitely not all about the beauty, are they?
No.
that's an understatement.
They are present, and they are there. And Freemasonry has fitted beautifully into the box of scapegoat. Not only for real things, like real conspiracies, real people that are doing nunus that are attaching this to Freemasonry, but also to those who have no understanding. It's all chucked into this little devil's pot.
So in order to get through each one of these steps, is it more about reading and research, or do you have to write papers, or do you have to like go do a mission? I mean, what exactly is entailed in each one of these?
You are required to go and study to find out exactly what you were taught in the first part. For example, in the first part, you are exposed to certain tools. Like, for example, one of the pillars of the pillars that we spoke about, the left-hand pillar. So now it's going to be up to the candidate to go and find out, okay, well, what does this pillar mean? Where does it come from? Why is it named like this? What does it symbolize? What does it mean to me? What truth can I take from it? It's up to the candidate to do that. And then when the candidate has been duly checked and questioned, he will then only after a period of time be admitted to go to the next level. But only if and when he understands the aspects of the first degree. Now, unfortunately, in the recent past, the last 300 years, they haven't put a lot of emphasis on the esoteric value, which is busy happening right now. People are wanting to know, why do they walk here? Why does this office bearer go there? Why does the master sit in the east?
Interesting.
Because the master represents the light. Just a representation of the light. It's all about light. It's all about knowledge. It's all about aspiring to a level of perfection.
And it's the as above, so below, as within, so Absolutely. Without. Yeah,
Absolutely.
Very, very much so, isn't it? That is just very fascinating. You know, I find that we really, truly are entering the new Renaissance because I had just done all this research on the Knights Templar, and they're having a resurgence, by the way, of people
yes.
joining them now, you know,
yes.
going back
yes.
to the old philosophies. And it's very similar to this.
Absolutely.
Very, very similar, you know.
Yes. And I get very excited about this because what we are saying is, is that the light is coming in. Whether you Oaks want it or not, it's just too bad. And all the chaos that's going on in the Middle East, all that chaos. You know, when you take a piece of meat out of the freezer, initially it actually gets colder. It's that resistance to change. That's all that's happening up there. Now, what my personal interpretation of that is, we cannot pity the people that all this stuff is happening to. Why? Because it was their soul contract. Mm-hmm. By pitying them, we negate their soul contract. We have no right to do that. But we can send them love, and we can bless them, and we can send them gratitude. And as we do this, this light that we're talking about is infiltrating. It cannot be stopped. It is happening. It's happening at every level. From the time of the ancients to now, it's manifesting, finally.
Yeah, it is. And you made a good point, too, because I oftentimes run into various articles because I have a blog, as you know. And one of the things that I have to make a decision on is when this article flies around the internet, is it going to increase the vibrational level?
Yes.
Okay.
Marvelous, Alexandra.
Yeah, I can't help it because I'm an alchemist. So I think of everything in terms of vibration. And now there is history that, you know, can be very dark and gloomy, but it's still, in my opinion, somewhat necessary to know that, to have that point of reference. However, it's also just as important to take the atrocities that are going on in the world and remember that it's the rest of the world that can raise them up just through our mere vibrational perspective.
Absolutely.
So, you know, that's very important, I think.
And knowing is very important. Yes, having the knowledge of all the ancient atrocities, having the knowledge of what is going on there. But like Viktor Frankl, in his wonderful book, you can choose your attitude regardless of circumstance.
Yes.
So we look at this. We do not buy into the fear. We do not buy into the negativity. We buy into the faith and the hope and the charity which appears on the Masonic ladder.
Ooh, I love it.
That's what we buy into. That's what we choose. Because by doing that, we're raising the planetary vibration.
I also want to add to that that I was sharing something on my call this Saturday. A gentleman was remote viewing and looking at various timelines. And he told me flat out, he says, there is nothing. You can see nothing past the year 2017.
And I'm not surprised.
And I said, what did you think about that? I had my own idea, but he says, well, apparently all the timelines will have converged together by then. And I said, yes, and by that time, we will truly be the creators of our own reality.
Now, the interesting thing is, this the Grand United Lodge was formed in 1717.
Mm, very good.
300 years later, they are busy preparing for wonderful celebrations already. 2017 and 1717.
Wow.
300 years. Very powerful number.
That's so cool. Well, and think about it. Can you believe we're almost there? And time is just flying by, you know. I think once we get through this year, last year was a real doozy. This year was pretty rough. Once we get through this year, I think we've gotten through some of the toughest stuff. So
I think so. I can feel that there was a huge lift for me this year.
Yes, yes.
There's a huge lift. You know, I find that I'm happy where I am within myself. I have very little need. I have very little need for accolades and for, wow, but you're smart, or I've got no need for that. It's as if I'm moving into this just is space.
Very good.
I've been there this whole year. I just am. And very much that powerful vibration of Iyehe Asher Iyehe. I am that which I am.
Nice.
It is becoming such a powerful manifestation for me. And I talk a lot about it, obviously, in my presentations. And I've noticed that with a lot of people around me, people's lives are falling into place.
Yeah.
Their purpose are manifesting. Their dreams are coming together. And it's the most incredible place to be right now.
It is.
And we chose to be here.
Yes. It's an exciting time, even though it's challenging. But yes. Hey, we are literally making history right now.
Absolutely. This is every moment of every day we're claiming that divinity that we can only express in limited ways in our three-dimensional world. But man, I can tell you, it is the most, you know, just after my dad passed, I was driving down the road and I was saying, you know, Dad, what if all this stuff that I've been talking about is just a bunch of hocus pocus? What if none of this is real? What did it feel like? Well, I have to tell you, suddenly I found myself on the inside of an acacia seed. Mm-hmm. You know, those pods that just jump open and release the seed.
Uh-huh.
It was a split second. I was driving my car and I went, whoa. And I got this incredible knowing. That's what it feels like.
Oh, wow. Just
exploding.
Oh, my God.
And becoming one with everything. So knowing all this stuff is what is really making us so excited.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And being able to really experience it and understand it at the same time.
Yes.
So important. Well, oh my gosh, Louise, thank you so much. I can't believe we finally managed to pull this out. It took me over an hour, folks, just to get on the internet today. It was ridiculous. So I appreciate all your patience. And once again, please feel free to drop Louise a line. Her email address is Kyra, K-Y-R-A, at simplyup.co.za. And, hey, tell them about your book, your Simply Up book.
I certainly will. Oh, I was 40 when I went to university the first time. And I did a BA and a master's and published a book in 7 years. And it's about owning up. It's about walking away from destructive relationships.
Excellent. Well, I hope that you have, well, this is probably quite a different avenue than speaking within a Masonic temple, huh?
Man, has this path changed direction? I tell you what, need a compass, yeah? Going due north. Or east, not sure, but something's happening.
Yeah, no kidding. But anyway, thank you so much again. It's been really refreshing listening to this. And please continue to keep us posted with any new discoveries you make. We are all kind of on the edge of our chairs to hear all about any new, you know, new innovations, especially with this type of metaphysical knowledge. My audience just eats this up as well as myself. So we thank you for doing all your research.
I just had one.
What? Tell us.
One minute. 30 seconds.
Okay.
My son comes down the other day and he says to me, Mom, why is the acacia tree so important to Freemasons? And he said, why is it not a pine tree or a cedar tree? Why is it an acacia tree? I said, I have no idea, but that's a good question. He said, I'll tell you why. Because the Acacia nilotica has some of the purest DMT, dimethyltryptamine, that activates the pineal gland.
Whoa!
That's my opinion. It's not a Masonic statement.
Wow, no, there can't be. Wow.
And the pineal gland is a Masonic symbol, the eye, the all-seeing eye. So all this came together. This DMT is in the most sacred tree. And it comes from ancient Egypt.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
So quickly, I had to share that with you.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that, Louise, and we really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much for all that you've done for humanity, sharing this information.
Thank you, Alexandra, and love and light to everybody.
Thank you. We love you, too. Thanks for everyone listening, and we will talk to you soon on the other side. Take care.
Thanks.
Lots of love.